Everybody, welcome to the PC Gamer Show. My name is Tom Marks. I am the assistant editor here at PC Gamer with James Davenport, our intern extraordinaire.
Hey.
And Wes Fenlon, our hardware editor.
Hello.
We got a great show for you today. We're going to be talking about our top 100 greatest PC games ever, which we posted online, the list of online recently.
This year's top 100.
This year's top 100.
PC games ever.
Yes, exactly. And then we'll be talking about the rampant rise of video game movies and TV shows that seems to be appearing, and whether or not that's a good thing. I got my hands on Civilization Beyond Earth's Rising Tide expansion earlier today, so we're going to be talking a little about that.
You played a lot of Rising Tide.
Yeah, I've yeah, actually...
Like a good hour and a half.
I played an hour and a half today with the developers, and then I also got to play about 3 or 4 hours of it at 2K a month or two ago.
Oh, nice.
So yeah. I've played a good amount of Rising Tide a month out before it even comes out, so that's kind of cool. And then we'll also be talking about some new G-Sync monitors that Acer announced last week, which can reach a ridiculous, like, 200 hertz refresh rate if you overclock them, and... are just kind of looking appealing in general.
It's an exciting time for monitors, which is a weird thing to say. Because monitors have not been exciting for, I don't know, 10 years or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and then we'll also, of course, have our Cat Fantastic quiz, which is Civilization IV themed today. So if you are a fan of Civ IV or Leonard Nimoy or both, be sure to tune in because this one is an audio quiz. And then, of course, our Twitch chat Q&A at the end of the show. But before all that, Wes, what have you been playing recently?
So the last time I was on the podcast, about a month ago, I talked about playing Vagrant Story as a joke because it's not actually a PC game.
Right.
I played Vagrant Story again this weekend.
All right.
In the PC realm, actually, I am really boring the past couple months. I'm still playing The Witcher 3 between like travel, various other just stuff going on in my life. I have played virtually no other game but that, and it's taken me 3 months to get most of the way through it. I'm at like 79 hours as of through this weekend, and I'm just into like the last... The story's kind of broken up into acts, and I think I'm in act 3 or act 4, whatever is presumably the last act. Maybe it's not. I don't even know. but I'm getting pretty close to the end, I think. But yeah, I'm still hacking away at The Witcher.
Enjoying it
and
still?
And still loving the shit out of it. It's good. So good.
Just in time for the expansion in October, maybe.
I saw that this morning and was kind of upset about it.
There's no break.
I'm probably going to be done in about 2 weeks, and that will mean the expansion would be just around the corner. And I'm like, I want to play Metal Gear Solid. But that game's massive also, so I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish that before The Witcher expansion comes out. Maybe I'll wait for the expansion a little bit.
You will never stop playing The Witcher. They're just going to release updates as you finish them.
That's what they freaking do. It's a problem, CD Projekt. Stop it for a while. Just chill out. Let me play something else, please. So yeah, that's pretty much all I've played, I think, the past week or so at home. We got to play Divinity a couple weeks ago, you and I.
Yeah.
Not really a lot, but we played
two,
a little bit.
That is, to specify.
Divinity 2,
Original
yes.
Sin 2.
Which they're doing a Kickstarter for now.
Yeah.
So that was really fun. And, you know, we barely saw any of it, and it's super early. But I am looking forward to that game. I think it's going to be better than the first one. So
definitely. It seems like a lot of what they did with that were, like, they put in a lot of the new systems and the new things that you're going to see in the new game, but when we played it, it was still very early, so it felt like all of those new systems just kind of like put on top of or into Divinity Original Sin 1, and I'm really excited. I agree, when that game like is finished and becomes a full-fledged, like, becomes its own thing, I think it's going to be really exciting.
I think it's in good shape already since they're building just on the technology they used for Original Sin 1. Like, even if the story in the new game just ends up being garbage, which is unlikely. Maybe it won't be great. Maybe it'll be amazing. Who knows? But even if the story is just completely throwaway, I feel like all of the changes they're making to the combat system, which was already really fun, are going to make it worth playing either way.
Yeah, and Sven mentioned who's the CEO of Larian, said that he, like, they were trying to ground the story more, which was really encouraging. Like, whether that works or not is still totally to be determined. But you made some joke about, like, no more, like, ancient beings and gods, right? Like, it's not, like,
it's basically like an Adam, excuse me, an Adam and Eve story plus an ancient dragon that you kill.
Yeah.
that was kind of the plot. I kind of tuned out, like, halfway through that game and was just like, all right, whatever. Another cutscene about these ancient immortal beings that I don't care about.
See, I actually had a problem with Original Sin is every time we got to a cutscene, I don't know why this happened, but every time we got to a cutscene, the game crashed.
Every time.
Yeah. Literally every time. So it got to the point where, and it was only when we were playing co-op, and I played the whole game co-op with someone. So we had to have one of the people log out right before we thought we were going to hit a cutscene, and then play the cutscene, watch on one monitor, and then log them back in and keep going with the multiplayer.
That's rough. I would have not done that, committed to that for the 70 hours or whatever that it takes to play through that game.
Well, those big cutscenes don't come too often, unfortunately enough.
That's true.
But similarly, they felt more like they were just kind of like roadblocks because of that rather than actually like integrated in. So it sounds like they've heard that criticism and they want to try to address it. How they do that will be interesting to see.
You know, I saw someone, just kind of speaking of now playing The Witcher, it's got me thinking about it. I saw someone make a comment on Twitter the other day. I think it was Nick Brecken of Idle Thumbs and Telltale, kind of just wondering what The Witcher 3, Metal Gear Solid, Fallout coming out in the fall are going to do to kind of reset people's current notions of how long games should be. Because I think, in general, the industry has been trending towards shorter games, especially in like the big AAA space where, you know, you get a campaign that's 10 hours long or 6 hours long if it's a shooter, or maybe 15, you know, or something. And like 20 hours felt like a really meaty, you know, action game for a long time. And now we've had this glut of like not only really long games, but games that don't necessarily just feel like bloated and full of filler. Like, there's definitely filler stuff in The Witcher 3 that you can ignore. Like, I haven't spent that much time in that game just going around killing monster nests. Like, I've spent the bulk of my time doing actual side quests with story that have been written and voice acted and motion captured and stuff. And that's a huge amount of content for that game. People have been playing Metal Gear that many hours already just in the past week. And Fallout 4, like, no one's going to stop playing that game ever.
Stop.
Like, you will die before you stop playing Fallout 4. So it's an interesting notion that there have been three really, really huge games this year that are also just massively long.
Well, speaking of Metal Gear, I'm going to ask this question completely rhetorically. Hey, James, what have you and I been playing this week?
Metal Gear Solid 5.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
I think that's literally the only video game I have played since Monday when it came out.
So how many hours so far?
I'm about 23 or 24 hours in.
I'm around 21, 22, something in there.
But also I'm at like, and we'll try to keep this for everyone watching and listening, we're not going to talk about story. Where we might talk about like, you know, gameplay things that we found, but we're not going to talk about any story stuff, any of that. So don't worry about that. I'm currently at 17% completion. It says every time you go back to your chopper, it tells you how much percent completion you're at.
I've heard that number kind of is meaningless.
I imagine it is, because when you complete Ground Zeroes is like story mode, quote unquote, it's 8% done. So I feel like the story is going to end far before 100%.
I feel like most of that is side ops and alternative objectives you get from completing missions over and over in different ways.
You don't really complete a mission 100% until you've like played it three times and gotten an S rank on it. Because there are missions.
Is that frustrating or is
no,
that cool?
No, it's really cool because
it's good.
Because basically the first time that you play a mission, there's like, it'll tell you that there are like six or seven mission tasks that you can do in that mission. But they only reveal like two. And the two that you need to do are the two you need to complete to finish the mission. And everything else is just secondary tasks. And those get revealed after your first playthrough of the mission. And sometimes they're at ends with each other. So one of them is like for example, A Hero's Way is like the first true, like, you're in the open world, go look for missions mission, right? It's really simple. It's just like, eliminate this guy. That's all the mission is, right? But the first time you play it, it says eliminate this guy. And then when you complete it, you get mission tasks that are like, eliminate him from while you are at least 100 meters away from him. Mm. And then you get one that's like, extract him. And then you get one that says, you know, do this instead. Like, a lot of the mission tasks, you cannot do all of them in one run. It intentionally is like, just do the mission how you want to do it. If you want to go loud, go loud. If you want to do stealth, whatever. And then after that, maybe you should try these if you didn't do it before that way. You know, maybe you can try to do this mission way. Like, it pushes you out of your comfort zone intentionally. And it's encouraging because it makes you want to replay a mission.
And often when you do those things, you can extract certain prisoners or soldiers that will help you do something specific and, like, you know, grant you an upgrade path in a certain gun that you wouldn't be able to get otherwise, or dog armor. There's a lot of cool dog armor.
To get an S rank on a mission, what do you have to do that you can't do the first time just by, you know, fulfilling the original objective?
I think you can do any mission with an S rank on your first try. I think that the mission tasks are like secondary things that get you extra points. Okay. But I'm pretty sure that if you just never got seen, never killed anybody, and like ran through a mission as quickly as you could in full stealth, you'd get an S rank for it on your first try. That being said, there are some missions that you literally can't, like, I don't think you can do stealth, or at least not very easily. Like, mm-hmm. There's one mission where it's like, blow up a bunch of tanks that are moving, and it's like, well, okay. And I guess
you still got to blow them up.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you could do that with C4, and like always remain out of sight, but it's like way harder to do some mission stealth. Like, intentionally, the game gives you these little, like, gimme, silly blow-up stuff missions. If anybody played Ground Zeroes, the Save Hideo Kojima mission, I think it was, like, the third mission in Ground Zeroes, is the same way. You fly in on a helicopter, and there's literally nothing you can do. Like, you just shoot people. And that's the mission. It's like, we don't have time to be stealthy. Go and kill people. And it's like, okay, but that's one of the few missions like that.
The secondary objectives remind me of way back in the day, GoldenEye had a really, really unique approach to difficulty design that I don't know if any other game I've played really has done as well, where when you play it on, I forget what the difficulty levels were, when you played the easiest level, it was like, you know, go in and like plant some mines on these things and then leave, and like that's the whole objective. And then once you got up to like agent and secret agent difficulties, it was like, oh, you have to steal these documents from this person and like, you know, knock somebody else out, and then go here and use this key card to do this thing to launch, you know, to get the launch codes for this missile, and then go to the other place. Like, they would add in all these different objectives you'd have to do within one playthrough of a mission. And obviously Metal Gear is way more sandboxy, so it's not like you have to do all these things in order. I think it'd be cool though if the ranking you get kind of depends on like how many of those things you completed, and there'd be a sort of class of rank that was like, oh, you have to complete 6 of the 8 objectives or something like that.
Well, and there's also it's kind of works like that, kind of, because like completing a secondary objective will get you a bunch of bonus points at the end of a mission. So like if you completed a secondary objective but you also like killed a dude, then
it'll balance out.
Yeah, you won't get the bonus points for no kills, but you will get the bonus points for the objective you did. So it'll kind of balance out a little bit. I mean, what have you been doing? Because I know I've just been running around, like, doing side ops. I'm, like, not very far in the story, even though I'm 23 hours in, because I've just been doing secondary stuff.
I think I've been a little bit more motivated by the story, because, I don't know, I'm coming at this from that angle. It's, like, hardcore, I don't want to say hardcore, but very big Metal Gear Solid
You like
fan.
Some Metal Gear.
I like me some Metal Gear, and I'm very curious as, you know, to what's going on. And a little frustrated that its story is doled out so sparingly. Most of it you get in just cassette tapes that you listen to, which is extra weird because that's where the bulk of Kiefer Sutherland's like voice acting budget is in these optional cassette tapes.
Yeah.
So un-Metal Gear.
It's really un-Metal Gear.
It's so weird to me, and it's actually incredibly disappointing to me, and I think... I don't know. If I were to review this game, again, I haven't beat it or anything. Maybe there's some revelatory, like, third act that would change my mind completely. But it just feels it doesn't feel like the proportions are right. When a cutscene or something happens, it's usually pretty badass, and there's a lot of great set pieces, but I don't feel like Snake is being characterized like at all. And what's there is actually fairly paper thin and easy to understand. There's a lot of like global conflict and a lot of acronyms that don't really mean anything.
Well, that sounds like Metal Gear.
Yeah. So that stuff is familiar, but as far as like what is actually happening between characters is very, very slow, or at least, you know, paced out over like 20 hours of adventuring I've done so far.
I can't believe that the complaint that Metal Gear had, like the complaint about Metal Gear, the most common one I've heard is there's not enough story. Like, that's absurd after Metal Gear Solid 4, which was like, I think it had 20 to 40 hours of cutscene.
Let's not even talk about Metal Gear Solid.
We won't go there. But, I mean, the basic complaint I want to make is like a... Yeah, Metal Gear Solid 4 was like one absolute in that regard of Metal Gear Solid storytelling. This feels like the other absolute. I really wanted was something like that. I wanted something that felt like Kojima maybe had an editor. But this just feels like Kojima had a budget or something and not enough time.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because I'm not a huge, huge Metal Gear fan, but also, like, I liked the story so far and that sort of thing.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think I would complain about there being a lack of story, too, and a lack of cutscene. Like, I miss those things a little bit. But the gameplay and the open world is just so good that I just don't even care.
Like, I think that's where I'll fall, too.
It's like, it's just so much fun to play that I kind of don't care I'm missing out on the story.
And I'm also with you. I mean, there's like the inner child in me who's like a little like, But otherwise, like, I'm having a blast. Just, I don't know how you're playing. I'm not doing the whole like, if I don't stealth it, I'm reloading a checkpoint. Like, if I get caught.
No, if shit happens, shit happens.
Yeah. And, for the most part, I'm finding, like, I'm becoming more confident in my skills. I'm getting better at being stealthy, like, and quickly, like, improvising and staying undercover and, like, not getting caught.
Yeah, the only time that I've aborted and restarted middle of a mission was when I was beaten to death by child soldiers. And that was just embarrassing. So I...
You didn't want that on your permanent record.
No, so I restarted that mission.
But, yeah, I mean, like... It's a fun like loop of going out and doing some side ops, maybe a store mission here and there if you have the time and the heart, and then coming back to, like, Mother Base, checking in with people, like upgrading stuff,
petting your animals.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say it, declaring it right now, like D-Dog has the best panting animation I've ever seen in a game on a dog.
Better than the Call of Duty dog from a couple years
Absolutely.
Ago?
Absolutely. It's wow. Unbelievable, especially when you're in the helicopter and D-Dog is just always sitting right there, just in your face. It's, as a dog fan, 10 out of 10.
So, anyway. Metal Gear, the conclusion about James's review of Metal Gear, not enough story, great dog panting.
Yes.
You know, 2 years, I think 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we had Year of the Bow with Tomb Raider and Crysis 3 and about 50 other games. This year might be the year of the dog.
It's true.
Yeah.
I think we're at year of the dog.
Well, who
Witcher else counts too, I guess a bit, right? He's got that wolf medallion.
That's a little bit of a stretch.
Okay.
But there's going to be dog meat and Fallout.
Oh yeah.
And there's D-Dog, and I think there's a few that I'm forgetting who are some other prominent game dogs. So.
Well, speaking of other games past and great games, we released our top 100 greatest PC games of all time list for this year last week, and it was in the magazine, I think, the month before. We have that mag here, and...
Oh, look at this. Can I just read our magazine for the rest of the
Yeah,
podcast?
The next hour of the show is just going to be Wes quietly reading...
Oh, I meant just read it for myself.
Oh, okay. To give you guys some context about what this list is and how we come about doing it, we have all of our writers in the U.S. and the U.K. and all of our editors, and then a lot of our freelancers who we love to death, essentially rate their top 15 games, PC games of all time. And it's, I believe the criteria we were specifically, it's like what we recommend people should play, right? It's games that hold up, right? And there is a nostalgia factor to them, but we're not going to put like some text-based adventure game is like an amazing game, but it's maybe not quite what we want on the very top of the list, even if it was very, very influential to PC gaming.
Yeah, these are not so much games that changed PC gaming or had the most important cultural impact at the time of their release. These are the games that if you were going to make a list of 100 games that you would recommend to somebody to play right now, these are the games that we would recommend.
Yeah, and we had everybody give up their, just put up their personal top 15, and then, you know, what rank they were got points, and that created this big long list, and then we had our head editors get together and kind of prune the list and shape it to how we wanted.
Yeah, so if you're angry that Ultima 1 is not on the list, sorry.
Send us an angry email.
We'd recommend new RPGs.
Letters Ultima at PC Gamer.
Was incredibly important, but not so much 30 years later.
If you'd like to tell us how wrong we are, feel free, anywhere you'd like, Twitter, our email address, whatever.
So do we want to call some out?
Or? Yeah, call some out. We also, it's also important to note that on top of those, we also put in just a couple of our personal picks into the magazine one of things that didn't show up on the main list, but things that we still really, really liked. Like, my personal pick was Fez, the puzzle game, because I'm crazy about that game, but obviously, like, not everybody thought it should be up there. And to be fair, maybe it didn't deserve to be on the 100.
My personal pick was Oddworld Stranger's Wrath,
nice.
Which is, to date, one of my favorite games ever, and I think it's a, like, perfect, just, like, distilled game design course. Like, playing that game, you will learn how good level design works, how, like, creative weapon design works, good encounter design, all that kind of stuff. It's a really fun game.
So pull one out here. Like, the thing is, a lot of these games, I think, you can complain and you can, like, argue about, like, the nitty-gritty of, like, which is what number and that sort of thing, but, like, I don't think anyone can deny that the top 100, like, this list is some of, is 100 of the best games to ever come out for PC. That is indisputable.
Yeah. So, interestingly, like, in our top, or in the back five starting from 100, there are a couple new entries we have that haven't been on the list before, including Spider and Web, which is actually a text adventure from 1998, which is much later than you would expect to see that from the genre. Stanley Parable is on there.
Love it.
So those are both new entries, and there's some old ones on there as well, like Sam and Max.
I'm really happy Stanley Parable made it as well.
Agreed.
Gone Home and Plants vs. Zombies are in the top, or in the back 10.
Plants vs. Zombies was controversial.
Was it?
To some commenters is what I'll say. It's not enough of a PC game, but I think it's amazing.
Plants vs. Zombies was so fun.
So
I played
good.
The hell out of that game.
Oh, me too.
Played on my netbook back when netbooks existed.
Plants vs. Zombies is definitely, I mean, I can understand why people might take fault with that, because it is also on iPad and it is very good with touch controls, but like, it is such a good game. Like, it is just such a, like, fun game. So I think we can forgive that one, people.
Another couple of my favorites that are new entries, Command & Conquer Red Alert 2. Still probably the most fun Command & Conquer game. It's definitely my favorite, although I loved Command & Conquer 3 as well.
What number is that?
89. Terraria came in at 88.
Which I'm happy about.
Great game. Ooh. Far Cry 4 is 86. And that's one where, you know, there are still people who love Far Cry 2, and there are good reasons to really, really like that game. Far Cry 3, tons of fun as well, but Far Cry 4 kind of does what Far Cry 3 did, but better in most cases,
right.
So it makes sense for Far Cry 4 to be on there.
And you'll see a lot of these too, like Psychonauts, for example, is at 83, is a new entry, right, to the list, and this is starting to become something that we're doing annually, if I'm not mistaken, and at its core, this is a subjective list, right? Like, as new people with new tastes come and go on the PC Gamer team, like, things will come show up or not show up that you wouldn't expect, right?
And there's no such thing as an objective top 100 list.
No, yeah, no. There just isn't.
And there's plenty of old stuff on there, like Anachronox, Doom 2 are both two older games. Heroes of Might and Magic 3, like, all classics. Max Payne.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's actually a new entry. Max Payne was not on
really?
There before.
That's surprising to me.
I mean, once again, these games are just so good. Like, any one of these games, you could be like, wow, how did that not make it to the last list?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I mean, it's surprising.
Grim Fandango. Yeah, nobody likes that game.
Nah.
I mean, the thing you can take from this list, if anything, is, like, there are so many
That's
good
what
PC
I was
games.
Say. Yeah, I mean, like, we could probably make three totally different top 100 lists and still have room for more.
Yeah.
And be pleased with them because, man, PC.
The top 10-ish might stay similar.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So should we count down the top?
Yeah, let's do the top 10 here.
Skip down here.
Honestly, that's what everyone skips to anyway, right? Just,
they want to see what they have to be most angry about.
So cheating a little at 11 is Thief 2. And, like, we are huge fans of the Thief series, I think, at PC Gamer, just in general. And Thief 2 is a great game. Fallout New Vegas comes in at number 10. Portal, number 9.
Mm.
Portal 2 is, like, a few back. I think
it's like
15
or something. Like 13 somewhere. It's close.
I think I am more of a Portal 2 fan than Portal 1, but you can't argue that Portal 1 isn't, like, distilled, just, like, a great, you know, four-hour game.
Yeah.
Deus Ex is at number 8, which is actually considerably further back than it has been, I think, for the past couple
really?
Years. I think usually it's top 5. But I actually only played Deus Ex for the first time maybe, like, 4-5 years ago, something like that.
Did it hold up for you?
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, I could see exactly why people loved it at the time, and a lot of the stuff it does well, still nobody does these days.
Cool.
The parts of it that weren't great then are still not great. Like,
right.
The shooting is kind of just terrible, but that's kind of part of the charm, and you work around that, and that encourages you to augment your guns or just take, you know, other ways to deal with stuff.
Augment your eyes, yeah. Well, I mean, I played Deus Ex for the first time last year.
Dang.
When I was doing it for, like, a pixel boost on the site, and I did not care for that game. I mean, like, maybe I just need to spend some time getting into it. But
shut
like,
your mouth, Tom.
Like, even. I can understand, like, that's one of the games to me that, like, I feel like had more of an impact when it came out than to any new gamer playing it today. But maybe, I know that's blasphemy. I'm not saying it's a bad game by any means.
It takes a few hours before you get to the point where you're able to, when you're going to complete a mission, and then you realize how many different ways you can complete that mission and how unique that is and how just, like, interconnected parts of the world are that you would think, like, oh, maybe there's a way in and there's a back way in. But no, there's, like, two ways in and three back ways in, you know, and ways you can talk to people and change, you know, just use conversations instead of violence or vice versa.
Yeah, I guess I just didn't get into it enough to really see all that, which is totally, you know, that's my mistake.
Dishonored and Skyrim
cool.
are on there. Team Fortress 2, which has moved up a few points because, man, Team Fortress 2 is just still going.
Yeah,
like, it's insane that Team Fortress 2 is now 4, but it just keeps getting better,
you know, and it remains just like a vital, fun game coming up on 10 years, like 8 years into its life now.
500 patches or something ridiculous.
Yeah, I hop into it and I have a good time almost every single time.
BioShock.
Yeah.
Number 3.
And that moved up from 5.
It's a good game. So.
And our winner from last year, Mass Effect 2, has slipped down to the number 2 spot in favor of Half-Life 2.
Which was our number 3 last year. And Half-Life 2, I feel like Half-Life 2 and Mass Effect 2 jump around a couple times. Like, there's a few games that are almost always in the top 5-ish, right? Like, Half-Life 2, Mass Effect 2, Skyrim are almost always up there. And they deserve to be, you know? But I think that we're going to start seeing some, like, creep up. Some new, like, big open-world games inspired by those games start to creep up.
The Witcher 3.
The Witcher 3 is at, like, 30 or something right now. And I think that once it matures even more, like, and once we see how that game holds up in, like, a year or two from now, that game is going to start getting higher up there. I think the same thing with Metal Gear. I think Metal Gear is going to start
high?
I don't know if it's going to start high, depends on when we, like, how long from now we do the list, you know? It depends on how the online plays out, stuff like that.
True, holy cow.
I'm excited for Metal Gear Online. I'm really curious to see what that's going to be like on PC for this iteration of
especially
the game.
If it, I mean, like, the problem with past Metal Gear Onlines is, like, I mean, we're on PlayStation 2, but also they controlled, like, old Metal Gear games.
Yeah.
And this one... Yeah, has a lot of room to be something.
Maybe
cool.
Half-Life 3 will be on the list someday. Who knows?
Why don't do that?
Just maybe it'll be number 3.
Have you guys played Half-Life 2 in recent years?
And number 33.
Do you think that holds up, Half-Life 2?
I think it definitely holds up. Yeah. I played it... I think the most recently I played Half-Life 2 was about a year ago.
Okay.
And I think that game is just still good. I think even the art style of that game, to a certain degree, like, doesn't look very bad.
No,
it's not amazing, of course. It's not these beautiful games like The Witcher that we're getting, but it's like it doesn't look super crummy and dated in a similar way to the first one does, you know?
The Source Engine has aged pretty well.
Yeah, it has. I mean, for in a similar vein, TF2 will
still
always
look
good, right? Like, because of its art style and because the Source Engine is holding up.
I was never as forgiving of some elements of Half-Life 2 as I think most people were. Mm. Like, I thought the vehicle sections just sucked. Mm. I didn't like either of them. I don't think most people like the vehicle sections, do they? Really? Maybe I'm in the minority there.
I think you are in the majority. I think we're just two oddballs right now.
I mean, there were parts of them that were okay, but the boat section,
they were very long,
way too long.
Oh, okay. So maybe I'm thinking the Jeep section, the car section.
The dune buggy was definitely better.
The dune buggy I really liked. I agree that the boat was very on rails. Stop at an outpost, blow it up, keep moving. Like, and I agree there, but I really liked the driving along the highway part of it.
I think either way, like, you don't see that kind of thing in a first person shooter often, like, throughout the years. Even, like, I mean, like,
shooters have definitely moved to either being like this very linear kind of on foot at all times thing, and except if there's like a mini game, or being a big, you know, Far Cry 4 style, like, open world type deal.
That's the thing, is like all the shooters that are not open world like that, and I, you know, maybe this is not the greatest example for Call of Duty and Battlefield for an example of shooters, but like the shooters that are not open world are like action movies, right? Like, they're just high intensity, go, 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 you gotta save the world.
By following this other guy.
Yeah, right?
He'll open the door for you.
But, like, the thing that I liked about Half-Life, the way that Half-Life told its story, was that it was much more like either a sci-fi movie or like a thriller movie, where it didn't mind being slow, and it didn't mind telling you a story at a very leisurely pace, and like it didn't have to be high intensity all the time. There were segments where you were running and being chased through like the city by Combine, but then there were also points where you just had to like walk through like a cave, you know, and you had to just like get through it very kind of slowly and quietly. And that pacing is something you don't see anymore in shooters, in first-person shooters.
And also, I mean, I hate to, it's obvious, but like, have you guys played a level like Ravenholm that depends purely so much on like physics?
I played Ravenholm when I was like in elementary school.
Holy
or like,
cow. Wow.
Or like, I think it was
a lot of people listening to this are gonna be mad at you.
Yeah, I know. I played Ravenholm when I was really young, and we had the family computer, right? I could not play that level alone. I had to have my brother playing it with me, my older brother, because I was terrified. I still have the memory of this, the first time you come up with those skinny zombies, right?
Yeah.
And I remember hiding in a corner, and one saw me and started to charge towards me, and I shot a explosive bat, like, tube at it, right? It blew up, lit on fire, and kept running at me, and I just lost it. Like, that memory is burned into my mind.
I agree that there are a few games now, and even if you say, okay, physics was kind of Half-Life 2's gimmick, not every shooter has to use that expertly in its design, but it just in general, there aren't many games that have the confidence to have kind of one form of gameplay for a large chunk of it, and then like put you in a place that's just like, now you have to deal with this completely differently, because up to that point you were not using the gravity gun nearly as much to interact with the environment as you had to there, and it became almost a puzzle game, and it changed the atmosphere. It was like a freaking horror game and a puzzle game all at once.
And they teach you the mechanics of the puzzle game so well, like, in the middle of that. You know, the first time you enter that shed with the blades, the saw blades, there's a zombie cut in half with a blade under him, and you see that the blade cuts zombies in half. And then there's a doorway where the blades are blocking the doors, and then you learn that you can take the blades, pick the blades up with the gravity gun. Like, the pacing of how it taught you to go through its levels when it taught you new things, when it had threw new things at you, was just immaculate. It was amazing.
Yes, Half-Life 2 is still pretty okay.
Yeah. Basically, I like it.
It's good.
Yeah.
I hope that if Half-Life 3 does eventually happen, I think the one big thing on my wish list would be just better feeling guns. So I think that was why, for me, Half-Life 2 never had the impact that it did for a lot of people, is I just never liked the feel of guns in Valve games. And, like, I love Left 4 Dead 2. And the original Left 4 Dead. Right. But I still don't think the guns feel especially good in those games. Mm-hmm. I think what makes those games is just how well all of the elements work together with the co-op stuff and the different types of zombies and the way you're moving through courses and, you know, the strategy of when you're shooting and when you're using melee and all that stuff. It all works together really well. And there's kind of like a fun arcadiness to, like, shoot a shotgun and blow a bunch of zombies in half. But the gun, like, feedback and the animation and stuff never felt nearly as good to me as Bungie's games or Tripwire's games, you know, like Killing Floor. So I'm looking forward to whatever Valve does next. Hopefully they kind of bring in some better animation and better sound design and that kind of stuff to give you some more feedback on those guns.
I think what you just said is exactly right. I'm looking forward to whatever Valve does next.
Like, making a game would be nice.
Yeah, as long as it exists, I'm looking forward to it. Let's move along. If you'd like to see the full list, head over to PCGamer.com and check out our list of the top 100 greatest PC games of all time. You can see all of the in-betweens, and then let us know in the comment section below how wrong and stupid we are for putting something above something else or whatever.
And we're very sorry.
Yes, we're sorry we personally offended you.
I'm not sorry.
James isn't sorry. But moving on, let's talk about our next topic, which is the overabundance of video game movies that is currently happening and video game TV shows in the case of GTA. This is something that I've just been, I don't know, I've been noticing it, like, just over, like, the last month or so. Let's see, just in, like, last week or so, we got a trailer for the BBC's Grand Theft Auto docu-drama TV show thing. Yeah.
With Daniel Radcliffe looking very emo indeed.
Yeah, we got word that a Borderlands movie is being made. We got word that a Mega Man movie is being made. Hitman.
That's going to be a blast.
Yeah. Hitman Agent 47 came out to... Tyler wrote a great piece about... he rated the movie...
He really liked it. He thought it was great.
He rated the movie based on how good of a hitman he was, and apparently he's a pretty terrible
hitman.
Which
is my idea. I'm taking credit for that.
Okay. Well, that's
Tyler and I were drinking beer after work, and I was like, you should rate the movie based on how well he performs his assassinations, because we know it's going to be a bad movie anyway, but how good of a hitman is he? That's the question.
And then we also...
Turns out he's a really bad hitman.
That's not surprising to me. They gave him, like, superpowers or something. They made him like a super soldier. That's not Agent 4. We could get into that for a long time. But then there's also the Minecraft movie that's coming. There was leaked part of a trailer for the World of Warcraft movie, or just Warcraft. I'm not sure which one they're calling it.
It's just Warcraft.
Okay.
It's actually based on the original game, Warcraft Orcs and Humans, from 91? I don't remember when Warcraft came out.
I assumed it was set in the World of Warcraft lore. That's interesting that it's way back then. That's
well,
cool.
I believe it's all, like, canon. Like, I don't think WoW contradicts any of the old stuff, but I could be wrong.
No, right. I think you're totally right. I just meant I thought that they would be doing, like, a later or a new story or something like that. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Although I guess Warcraft 1 was maybe a little lighter on story than later games.
In-game, but I mean, Blizzard has had a long and wonderful history of these great manuals with pages of lore and backstory in them. So, yeah.
Well, that's coming out. Of course, we had the wonderful Pixels come out even before that, which if you want to call it a video game movie. Even Nintendo, which is, this isn't PC, but Nintendo has said that they'd be open to having their IPs like workshopped for movies nowadays after the abomination that was the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Hey.
That's debatable.
Hey,
that's
I watched
movie.
The Super Mario Brothers movie on Friday.
Oh, really?
Still great.
That's
still great.
This is so relevant. Oh my god!
That was maybe like the eighth time I'd seen it. Also,
man.
I mean, it's terrible, but it's also brilliant. And there's some stuff in that movie that the friend I was watching it with picked up on that I had never noticed before in years of watching it. So you guys have both seen Super Mario Bros.
Yeah,
movie,
right? Yeah.
You know when they go to, when they first go across into the Koopa's world, right?
Yeah. Mm.
Dinosaur world. And all the car, it's like this weird dystopian cyberpunk, like just shitville city, right?
Uh-huh.
All the cars are like running on electric wires and stuff. And we're sitting there watching it for about 5 minutes. And he just goes, all the cars are electric because they don't have fossil fuels. And I was like,
oh my God.
High concept Super Mario.
Seriously,
Bros.
And then there's a scene where like Daisy's being held in the castle, and the castle just has these weird like kind of spiky weird, like wall pattern stuff, not like actual spikes, but just like blocks that are all pointed, and it looks just weird. And then he points out like they actually recreated the block aesthetic of Super Mario Bros. 3. Like the way that you'd have like a square cube and then kind of like a diamond point in the middle of it so that it looked three-dimensional. They just made that. So they like tried to mimic the aesthetic of the blocks in the environment of the castle.
It's amazing to me that they try to mimic the blocks in the for the castle, but they would make like Yoshi a raptor and like Goombas these like weird tiny head monsters.
And some of the Goombas have like lizard heads, so they're probably supposed to be like Koopas.
Yeah,
turtles.
Oh, it's, man.
It's,
okay.
There's a weird amount of depth. Like, that movie simultaneously tries to adapt incredibly faithfully all these elements of the games while also being nothing like Mario whatsoever.
Well, let's talk about this then. So what does a filmmaker have to do to make a good version of a video game for a movie? Like, Agent 47, Hitman, like, they tried to be really accurate to him, and they made the character look like exactly like Agent 47, but then they also like made him have superpowers where he could like punch dudes across rooms and had super hearing or stuff like that.
I think that's totally missing the forest for the trees. Like, you can say, oh, well, they tried to be faithful because they made him look like Agent 47. That's not trying to be faithful. That's just going, what is the most surface level thing we can take from this existing media franchise and just plopping it on to a shitty script. The way you could make a faithful video game movie is to have a good script and to have a good director that knows how to tell a good story or capture whatever was compelling about the original thing. Same with like the Max Payne movie. Like, Max Payne is good. The thing that's good about the game is the writing. And, like, how just weird and, like, pulpy and stuff everything comes together in that with the cool action. The movie, yeah, you put a guy in a trench coat and make him glower, but that's not Max Payne. You know, you can't make Mark Wahlberg Max Payne by just putting a trench coat on him.
No.
But one of the things that makes a really good video game out of a movie, rather than a movie out of a video game, to me, is not being beholden to the movie story, telling a different story. It's one of the reasons that Batman Arkham Asylum was so good to me, was that it, like, the, you know, the first Arkham game, because it didn't go by any story that was already existing. They wrote, like you said, they wrote a really good story to tell that borrowed heavily from a lot of the comics and a lot of the TV shows and things like that, but it was its own thing at its core. And Mad Max, to another degree, it borrowed a ton of stuff from Fury Road and it borrowed a ton of stuff from the Mad Max universe, but at its core, it's its own story. And it's not trying to tell you something that was already a movie. And then you get really terrible movie games, which are literally just trying to recreate scene for scene the movie that they came from. So does a video game movie need to do a similar thing? Do they need to say, okay, we'll borrow from the video game plot, but we're just going to make our own story?
I totally think this should be their own thing. Two mediums don't translate into one another like effortlessly. You don't cram like a BioShock 10, 20, I don't know how many hours it was, story into 2 hours like easily and keep all the same characters and all the same beats and visually, you know, the same path through Rapture.
And just characterization, what yeah. makes a good character doesn't work the same way it does in movies and games. It works yeah. differently.
And I'm more interested in seeing like, okay, and it's a rare combo, I think, and that's why we don't see a lot of successful like video game movies. I'm more interested in seeing like a writer team, director team coming up, like who have actual interest in, you know, whatever the property is in the game and who like maybe played it a lot and care. I want to see what they can do and what they can, you know, pull out of this world into their own, you know, into their own baby. Like the process of adaptation is more interesting to me than just, you know, taking a, you know, bit from column A and column B and like shoving it into some fucking action movie. Like,
so what's your,
which is basically what Prince of Persia is. And yeah. it's probably the most, you know, there are video game movies that have way more character, like Super Mario Bros., for example, is definitely a movie with more personality than Prince of Persia. But if you're judging quality based on, like, production value and, you know, skill of direction and, like, how good the cinematography is and the score and that kind of stuff, Prince of Persia might be the best video game movie. But it's also very much just, like, a generic Hollywood action movie with whitewashed generic Hollywood, you know, characters. And, like, Jake Gyllenhaal's a really good actor. He's not really doing much in that movie. He's just, no. like, kind of cracking jokes that don't make any sense in the setting and jumping a lot.
So what do you think is causing this influx right now of, like, tons of video game movies? Well, is that my misperception? Have these video game movies always been there?
I mean, I remember there have been, like, swells, at least in that I can remember, of like all these movies being optioned and like talked about, but not really seeing the light of day. I think
John Woo is going to make a Metroid movie at
yeah,
one point.
Yeah, what the hell?
What?
Supposedly. There was a BioShock one being tossed around. There was like, you know, but I think we're actually going to start seeing some come to fruition because we, you know, Michael Fassbender, I think they're filming it,
Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
They're like, it's happening. But I think it's also the first time that movie studios are seeing like these properties as like what as popular as they are and like as valuable as they are. Like, you look at Minecraft, and why the hell would you not try to make a movie out of that if you're a movie studio? You know,
mm-hmm.
that's like a gold mine.
I think in the 90s, it was very much, these games were really becoming big for the first mm-hmm. time, and it was a transition from the kind of the first wave of wildly popular games were games like Pong and Pac-Man, yeah. which you couldn't, there wasn't enough narrative hook there to really make a movie out of, although Pixels, that's basically what that is. But then once you started getting games like Super Mario Brothers and Double Dragon and yeah. Mortal Kombat, there wasn't much story in those games, but there was enough that you could, yeah, we can spin that off into a movie and have some hack screenwriter write a movie. And then the movies, I'm sure some of them made some money, but they were all critically panned. And so then there was a lull at that point where nobody was really making too many movies in the late 90s and early 2000s. You'd still get them every once in a while. You'd get a Tomb Raider and whatnot. But I think now the big thing that sticks out to me is that so many of the big budget AAA games are just trying to ape movies, and they have these really big production values and they try to make them very cinematic. And then when those games sell really well and are popular, that's just like saying to Hollywood, adapt us,
please,
you know,
mm-hmm.
make a big movie out of this. We already basically did it ourselves.
So I think the fundamental thing here that we've agreed upon is both in movie video games and video game movies, it comes down to the story, right? Like, it's come down to, if you don't have a good writing and a good story, and like, it's just not going to work either way. You know, it doesn't really matter 100% what the source material is. It's just like, you need to tell a good tale, which makes sense.
I mean, adapting movies into games, you don't necessarily have to have much of a story, depending on what the adaptation is. But for the most part, if you tell a bad story, that's way worse than not telling one at all, you know.
Before we move on, I just want to re-bring up the Battleships movie with Rihanna.
God, I watched Battleship.
It's a good movie.
Are you okay?
It's maybe the worst movie I've ever seen.
Oh, my God. I wasn't expecting that reaction.
There's a part. Have you seen it?
No.
There's a part where they drop an anchor and drift their battleship.
Oh, my
sick.
God.
Yeah. Sick. That's all you sick. Need to know.
That's incredible. Moving on, we're going to do this week's Cat Fantastic quiz, our weekly quiz. This quiz is very exciting because it's an audio quiz. So the next thing we're going to talk about is Civilization Beyond Earth, which I got my hands on. But before we do that, I wanted to do a Civ-themed quiz. So you guys can put your headphones on because this is an audio quiz. Those of you listening and watching at home, you can play along as well. Like I said, our theme for this week is Civilization, and specifically Civilization 4.
This is the part where I confess that I've played almost no Civilization.
That's fine.
In my life. My strategy time has gone to Command and Conquer and Total War and Warcraft.
That's why we have the people at home. James, what about you? Have you played a lot of Civ?
Mostly Civ 5, but you know, I dabbled in 4 a bit, so.
So we're both going to suck at this.
Yeah, it'll be great. It's for the fans, okay?
All right.
If you have played a lot of Civ 4, you'll know that every time you complete a tech, you know, in Civilization, they read you this very nice and noble quote of some famous person in history. They give this lovely quote, and in Civ 4, and this is the reason I've chosen Civ 4, it's narrated by Leonard Nimoy. Of course, Spock on Star Trek. If you need me to explain who Leonard Nimoy is, please turn off the
Leonard
stream.
Nimoy of Seaman fan. Seaman fandom.
Yes, know. Of course.
Who could forget?
No. We're going to be doing this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play you a Civilization tech quote, and you, except one word will be pinged out. Instead of the tech, you will hear this sound, which is the Civilization, like, notification sound, essentially.
Okay. All right.
You're going to hear that in place of the name of the tech, which he says in the quote. So the example of this, the test run we'll give you guys is here. You'll hear this.
Compels the soul to look upwards and leads us from this world to another.
At which point you would guess what word was missing, and then after your guesses are placed, you'd hear.
Astronomy compels the soul to look upwards and leads us from this world to another.
And astronomy was the name of the tech in that case.
And I think I'd do a better job trying to guess who said the quote.
So we're gonna start off slow and we're gonna ramp them up. And at the end, I'm not gonna lie, the last one, probably two, are just impossible. The last one is literally impossible. But play at home and you'll see how you do compared to James and Wes.
Was that Carl Sagan, by the way?
The astronomy one?
Yeah.
No, that was Plato.
Okay. I was going to guess either Aristotle or Carl Sagan.
If you need a hint after the quote, I will give you the person who said the quote. That might give you a little bit of a timeline or something that. So let's start off nice and easy. I hope you guys can get this one.
It has been said that is the worst form of government, except all the others that have been tried.
I can play again if you need it. We'll do twice.
It has been said that is the worst form of government, except all the others that have been tried.
Do you have any guesses?
There's so many completely inappropriate words.
I know. When I hear that, I keep thinking of
fit in quite well. But got to go with democracy?
Yeah. James?
It has been said that democracy is the worst form of government, except all the others that have been tried.
All right. That was correct. That was democracy. I hope. It seems like a lot of the Twitch chat got that one as well.
Who said it?
That one was Winston Churchill. Okay. So moving right along.
But once you have tasted, you will walk the earth with your eyes turned skyward. For there you have been, and there you will long to return.
Oh, my God.
You guys finding these a little inappropriate?
No, of course not.
Mm-mm.
But once you have tasted, You will walk the earth with your eyes turned skyward. For there you have been, and there you will long to return.
James, you want to go first?
Cheeseburgers.
Cheeseburgers is your guess.
Cheeseburgers in the sky.
So I'll give you a hint.
Okay. I'm going to say flight.
That is correct. It is flight. Oh, so we're going to save some time close. And not play the whole quote. But that was Leonardo da Vinci with flight tech.
Leonardo da Vinci of Assassin's Creed 2 fame.
Yes, of course.
Who could forget?
Of course. What, from where else? Okay.
Means the difference between poverty and starvation and the abundant life. Means the difference between poverty and starvation and the abundant life.
So that once again, blank means the difference between poverty and starvation and the abundant life.
I'm going to say education.
Oh, that's a good guess. Dang it.
You can say it,
stole
too.
It. Cheeseburgers.
I mean, I guess that also would be accurate, but no, this is the answer.
Chemistry means the difference between poverty and starvation and the abundant life.
From Robert Brent.
I suck at chemistry, and I'm doing okay.
Yeah. You're not. You're up right now. You're on. It's 2-1, I think, between you and James. Next. We're moving right along.
I have gained this by that I do without being commanded what others do only from fear of the law.
I can play again if
you
need.
One more time.
I have gained this by that I do without being commanded what others do only from fear of the law.
So he's talking about free will, but that doesn't fit in the sentence.
I have gained this by blank that I do without being commanded what others do only from fear of the law. I can give you the person.
Yeah.
That was Aristotle.
I don't know. That's not a thing. I'm trying to think of a tech tree that would...
Tick-tock, 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 tick-tock.
Jeez.
Burgers. All right, final guesses.
Cojones.
Hey.
Well.
I have gained this by philosophy.
Oh!
That I do without being commanded.
You just made the worst face.
What others do only from fear of the law.
Okay. Shut up, Aristotle.
All right.
Too obvious.
Now they start getting a little mean, if they weren't already.
Adds dignity to what would otherwise be a vulgar brawl. Adds dignity to what would otherwise be a vulgar brawl.
This one, the quote sayer might also be a help if you need it.
Yeah, let's do that.
Or do you want to take a guess first?
No, I mean, no. Go tell us who said it.
Frederick the Great. So that kind of gives you a time period where you're looking.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say it sounds like a quote about the nobility of warfare, but I don't know necessarily the right specific phrase.
Dance, the power of dance.
Dance, okay.
I'll go with warfare.
It was... Oh, I guess I got to play it.
Artillery adds dignity to what would otherwise be a
vulgar brawl.
Like I
said, these start to get a little mean.
I wouldn't know the specifics enough to be able to guess what the tech tree there was.
War quotes.
Okay. This one, the quote sayer will actually just give it away, so I'm going to try not to give it to you.
Never trust a you can't throw out a window.
What the fuck?
Never trust a you can't throw out a window.
Cat.
Cat? Did you say cat is a technology in the Civ 4 tree?
Is it not?
No.
Oh. So what would the tech tree answer here be? Would it be a politician? Would it be a
Oh my god.
I'll give you a hint. The person who said this is being featured by Seth Rogen in an upcoming biopic.
What? Seth Rogen.
Oh. Computer.
Nailed it. That was correct.
Never trust a computer. You can't throw out
so
a window.
Who said it?
That was Steve Wozniak.
Yeah, he's playing the Woz.
Yeah. All right. And last but not least, I literally put this in because it was too good not to put in.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
God.
It's just impossible. Literally, if you get this, I will be impressed.
Nuclear fission.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
If you give us the quote sayer, does that give it away?
It might. I can give it to you.
We can give the chat a few more seconds to
a couple
try
people
to guess
have
this
actually
one.
Already gotten it in chat.
I think I've heard this quote before.
You probably have. It's actually a quote by a Calder Willingham in The Graduate.
Oh.
So it's a quote from a movie.
Oh, what is that?
College.
Oh, I know the quote. I think I'm probably going to get what he says wrong, but I remember the context of the scene. And it's something like plastics.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes.
West Fenland, having deep not played dig. Civ 4, nailing this test. All the ones that could be nailed, at least.
Because I've seen a lot of movies and shit.
So, yeah, that's what we got today. I hope you did okay at home or were able to at least keep up. Honestly, I don't think I would be able to do this quiz very well. Let us know in the comments, though, at PCGamer.com or at Twitter at any of our handles below or at PC Gamer. If you like the audio quiz, we hope to have more of them as we go on, maybe a sound effects test from different games or something like that.
That was fun. Thanks for doing that.
Yeah.
That was a good time.
Anytime I can get Leonard Nimoy's sultry pipes into the PC Gaming show, I want to.
We should definitely do a what gun is this sound effect
oh,
from.
Oh, dang.
See, I would fail at that one, so it's fair play, I guess. Moving right along, though, let's actually talk about Civ a little bit. Civilization Beyond Earth is receiving its Rising Tide expansion coming up next month, October 9th. I got a chance to play Rising Tide about 2 months ago, but I also got a chance to play it this morning with two of the lead developers from Firaxis. We're pulling up just some of the footage that I had that I took today while we were playing. And Rising Tide, the most important thing about it is that it adds, for lack of a better term, water stuff. You can build a city on water. You can move water cities. There's a lot more water units. There's these weird, like, things like that. Big crater thing is actually this, like, new thing called, like, I think it's called a monument or something, or can't remember the exact name now, but they add a lot of cool little things here and there. And, of course, it does the regular thing of, like, rebalancing and updating the base game.
Mm-hmm.
Have I played much Beyond Earth or much Civ 5?
I played a decent amount of Civ 5, but no Beyond Earth.
Okay.
I only played a little bit of Beyond Earth at, like, E3 last year, so enough to kind of grasp the differences between regular Civ and Beyond Earth, and that's about it.
Yeah, and if you guys, like, if there are any burning questions you have, I can try to answer from what I've played. This is you're seeing now is the newest Civ leader that they announced, which is called Integer, and it's kind of like a Germany Civ. It's like very diplomatic. But in general, like what I was looking for while I was playing this, and I think that it looks really fun, and it looks like a very, very good full update to Beyond Earth, right? And it played like that too. But one of the things that I was nervous about with it, and I think it didn't really go too far in actually assuaging my fears about this, is that there's a certain mystique and amazing thing about being Gandhi and building India, you know, and then, like, waging war on Tokugawa or whatever. Like, there's this appeal to that experience. Mm-hmm. And that's not really as present in Beyond Earth. And what they've done to combat that is they've made everything customizable, right? You have this huge tech web instead of a tech tree, and you have like three different affinities you can go down. You can customize your own units. You can customize buildings. Like, it all becomes yours. You can actually customize the traits now in the new Rising Tide expansion. You can customize the traits of your leader, and the leaders have a bit more personality to them. They have a bit more unique things about them. You customize your loadout when you start the game. But I'm not even, like, it's just got me nervous that, like, this update is going to be great, and it's going to be, help Beyond Earth be a much better game than it is now. Not that it's bad now. It's just, you know, it's going to make people more like it more. But it still won't solve that issue, if you know what I mean. Mm.
And that's an interesting issue, too, because I like 4X games in general, and just kind of, it's a weird gap that I haven't played much Civ, but I've played a lot of, like, Endless Space, for example. And there are a lot of people out there who love other, you know, space-based 4X games and, like, really deep strategy games, stuff like Sins of the Solar Empire, that have no connection to real history whatsoever, and that's fine. It's a sci-fi-themed strategy game. Go. Like, that's all you need for those games to be relatively successful. And maybe just what we expect from a Civ game in terms of success is way, way loftier than what, you know, Sins of a Solar Empire needs to sell to be successful. But it really feels like Beyond Earth came out and was a good game and not too many people cared.
Yeah. It's just a weird reaction to a good game.
Is it because it was, I mean, from the outside looking in, it seemed that people thought it was very similar, like too similar
to Civ 5.
To Civ 5.
And a lot of people already own Civ 5.
Yeah.
I actually asked them if they thought that whether Civ 5 and Beyond Earth could coexist. And I think that they understand that not everybody is going to, like, sci-fi setting is not going to appeal to everybody in the same way that historical setting is not going to appeal to everybody. But, I mean, it still feels like more Civ people, like, should have kind of followed over and didn't. Okay. And I'm, I don't know. I used to play a lot of Civ 5, and similarly, Beyond Earth didn't really interest me as much, even though it was, like, it did all these cool new changes. And I think one of the things that they're trying to do is they're trying to insert more story with Rising Tide. They're trying to insert more personality into these leaders and make them more, like recognizable and have a narrative you can create around them.
Okay. That seems like a good move, but I kind of agree with you that it's a hard thing to fight against what people love Civ for, which is that weird mixture of real history and the way you're reshaping history in, you know, comical ways or ridiculous ways or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, conquering the world as some Native American tribe and, you know, or as Gandhi and waging war on people, or...
Well, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, besides adding customization and water stuff, does that just mean, like, you're building cities on water now? Like, what's changing in that regard?
So I've heard this now, both when I played it at 2K a couple months ago and now today, is they kept emphasizing that internally they didn't want water cities to just be cities on blue tiles. That was the exact language they used. And so their border growth can only happen. It doesn't happen through culture like usual. It happens where you actually physically move the city, like tiles, and then their new borders, like adjacent tiles, become part of your territory. So you can literally, like, use a city to just paint, like, a border around an area. Like, if you wanted to build a water city and just waste all of its production, just moving it up a coastline to just take over the entire coastline, like, you could. And it adds to me a lot of hilarious cheese strategies to, like, online games where you just, like, build a Berlin Wall of territory down the center of the map and then don't give open borders to anybody and, like, just sit there the whole game. Like, but...
Yeah, I don't really know. It sounds cool, and I would give it a shot, but honestly, if I'm going to pick up a Civ game for the first time, which I will eventually get around to doing, it'll probably be Civ 5.
Yeah.
Or, you know, maybe you go back to Civ 4, but probably Civ 5. And I like sci-fi a lot, but something about that setting, I feel like it does still feel kind of limiting, that you don't have just the propensity to latch on to these identifiable characters or races or, you know, or whatever it is that you really people love in Classic Civ, that even if you kind of apply some fiction to your leader, you're not going to have that.
And then that's definitely what they've tried to do, is like you have diplomatic traits now, and so like each, like the history of each Civ, like informs what those traits will be. Like they told, I can't remember the name of it, but they told me about one of the new Civs for the Rising Tide, where every other Civ, when it went out into the stars, like was in like a cryo ship. They were on a ship without cryo chambers, and so they'd lived like 8 generations on a spaceship. And so, like, they had very little means, and so all of their traits have to do with, like, lowering costs or making more out of less materials, essentially.
That's cool.
Yeah, so they've tried to do a lot of that, and I just hope that, like, I hope that it's enough, you know? I hope that it's enough because it is a fun game, and it does a lot of things that Civ can't do, like customizing history, right? Like, you can't have as many customization options in a historical game.
I guess what I'd be most interested in knowing about Beyond Earth, and especially the expansion, is just what does it allow gameplay wise aside from kind of, that's more aesthetic and like character, what you're talking about, the customization, but like, you know, how do the systems for politics and, you know, commerce, how do those differ from a historical Civ game? You know, what does the sci-fi setting allow them to do to change that kind of stuff, make it potentially more interesting or just different from regular Civ?
Commerce is very similar. The Rising Tide actually fundamentally alters how you actually talk to other people. So there's no more like, we should be in a friendship agreement, right? Like, or like, we should be in a trade agreement. Like, you trade, there's a new resource called diplomatic currency, basically. And you gather that, and then you can see somebody else's traits by what they've done, and then like give them diplomatic currency per turn to get whatever part of whatever their trait is. And then the more you trade these agreements with them, the more they start to like you. And then they also have a fear and respect level for you, and you can like either bully people into agreements or like make them like you enough that they do agreements with you. So it's different. It's a significantly more nuanced like conversation with the AI than the other games, which was very much like, do you want to give me open borders? Why, sure. Like, it's no more of that kind of like canned talking.
That sounds great, because I think that's usually a weakness in 4X games, just because that's a really hard thing to program in a way that like the AI characters are behaving in their own interest while also still being fun to interact with.
Yeah.
Because most of the time, like, realistically, if they're just behaving the way they would if they were a person, it would be miserable to play against them, because they would just screw you over all the time. Because why would they be nice to you? So you got to find that balance between them, you know, kind of behaving in a way that is fun for the player while also not just being a total pushover.
We also had a funny little conversation about like how long does a Civ have to be around? Like, how long did a civilization have to exist in order to have been in the Civ 5 historical game, right? Like, because like the Shoshone, like, is kind of like a lower, like, wasn't a huge dominant civilization, right? Like, but they were added into Civ 5 in the Brave New World expansion. But like, the point I brought up was like, America's only been around for like 300 years, right? Or like 400 years. Like, how, like, there are probably civilizations in ancient times that lasted longer than America has existed, like, but those aren't in the game. And like, what constitutes that? And I just thought it was so funny. And you don't have any of that conversation with Beyond Earth, you know? Like, these are these fake place people that they've created.
But sci-fi is cool.
It is. It's very cool.
So cool.
Speaking of cool things and the future, let's move on to Acer's new monitors.
Ooh, yes.
Because these are some just pretty like crazy, insane things that they announced last week.
Do you want to pull up the exact like serial number, name, model names of these monitors so that I don't have to recite them off the top of my head?
Yeah, so we have this is, let's see, I can't remember which one this is.
So it's Acer's Predator line of monitors that they recently announced it at IFA, I think.
The Z35, the XB281HK, the XB271HU, and the XB271HK. I hate monitor names. Wes, why are monitor names so terrible?
I mean, they just use model numbers, right? Which are important to have, because there will be, so like in the case of these two of these monitors, the model number is only one number off, but one of them has like a different type of screen than the other one. So it's important to have that designation in. You typically don't really name them something as well in a way that would be, you know, make it easier to understand if you don't remember this 7-digit code for something, right? Like they could easily be the Acer Predator, like black, and the Acer Predator, you know, aquamarine or something. I don't know.
But the exciting thing about these, and the reason that we are specifically talking about these monitors that were announced, is because there's things like a 27-inch IPS 4K monitor, which that's like it's what, 75 hertz refresh rate. That's the XB271HK.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And that's like, that's a really cool thing. It's so good to see IPS monitors that are getting bigger and getting higher refresh rates.
Yeah, I mean, this year is the first time. The earlier this year, Acer put out the first one, I believe. They put out a 144 hertz IPS monitor.
Yeah.
And if you're not a monitor expert, the kind of crappy flat screen you've probably had for years and years, it's 1080p, whatever panel, it's most likely a TN panel. And
that's TN, like the letters,
yeah,
T
it stands
and
for
N.
Twisted Pneumatic, I think. They work well, they're cheap, and they can refresh very quickly. So those are all good things. Mm. But their color quality is not that great. They're kind of dull and washed out compared to better quality screens. And the viewing angles are really bad on them, which is why when you look at it from off-axis to the left or right, or especially up and down, the whole image quality just goes to shit. You just lose a lot of the color that you see looking at it dead on. IPS screens, by comparison, more expensive, typically slower refresh rates. They could get to 60 hertz okay, but like you'd have some more input lag often. Not something most people would notice. Like I've gamed on an IPS monitor just fine without seeing ghosting and stuff. But they are more expensive. The trade-off is you get really, really, really nice color quality, and the viewing angles are great. You can look at it off axis and it looks pretty much the same, you know, just about the same image you get dead on. But they haven't been able to go above 60 hertz, really, other than like you could overclock a few models out there. Tom, I think you actually have an overclocked monitor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I have an IPS monitor that I actually ended up buying refurbished. I don't know the exact model number, unfortunately, because it's a garbage pile of letters and numbers. But it's a 24-inch IPS monitor that I got for $100 refurbished, and it's overclocked to 72 hertz refresh rate.
So that's a nice little bump, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's. I mean, I'm a really big proponent of, like, after, like, 60 or so, it starts really being diminishing returns, in my opinion. But at the same time, I also noticed a difference, like between 60 and 72.
And
so
so between 60 and 72, you're not even talking up to 144, which,
yeah,
I think is really noticeable.
Yeah. It's especially noticeable in, like, if you play CSGO, you will notice the difference. I'm not saying that it is unnoticeable, like, always. I'm just saying that, like, if you're just playing, like, if you're not playing, like, if you're not pushing a game to its limit, like, it might be harder to notice those high levels.
I mean, even on the desktop, when you're just moving your mouse cursor around, you can tell how much more fluid 144 or even 120 hertz is by comparison. Now, that doesn't dramatically affect the quality of using your desktop. You're not like, oh, this is so much better. My mouse cursor is so responsive. Like, usability-wise, it doesn't make a big difference. But you can, you know, you can perceive that difference, absolutely.
Yeah.
So IPS monitors were stuck at 60 for a long time. Earlier this year, Acer put out 144 hertz IPS model. Great monitor. It's our pick for, like, best monitor right now. Downside is it costs $800.
Right.
Asus is putting out a very similar model. And these are both G-Sync monitors, so that adds the cost as well. They're putting out a similar model, I think, in October. And I don't know how much that one's going to cost, but probably $800. I'm hoping that there being two of them will kind of drop the price down a little bit. But now Acer is putting out a 200 hertz monitor as part of this lineup. I believe it's the ultra wide.
Is it overclockable to 200 hertz? Or
I think
is it
that
stock?
Might be it. I think it's stock, like 150, and they say you can overclock it to 200, which is also the first time I've ever seen a company advertise that their monitor is overclockable.
I didn't even know you could overclock monitors until I was researching monitors and found out mine could
be. So how difficult was it for you to overclock.
Incredibly simple.
Did you use like NVIDIA control panel?
Yeah, I used NVIDIA control panel. I just set a new customization thing, and it was just like boop. And I didn't even like to be honest though, I didn't like play around and see what worked and what didn't work. I just had read online before I bought that monitor that everybody was like, yeah, you can overclock it to 72, no problem. And if you're buying a monitor, it's worth probably Googling and just being like, is this monitor overclockable? Because if you have an NVIDIA graphics card, it is so, so simple. If you know that it can be, and you just like you just type it in and it's done.
Yeah, there are a lot of little kind of values that potentially have to be changed to make a monitor behave properly at different either resolutions if you're downsampling or different speeds, refresh speeds. But the advantage of the internet is you can go on and find somebody who has your exact model of monitor, and if it was overclockable, they probably will have posted the exact, you know, timing numbers and overscan values and all this stuff to that you can just copy and replicate, and it'll work just fine.
James, what kind of monitor do you use? Because you just moved to the Bay. So
honestly, I just chose the best value on our own list and went with that. I don't even know what it is.
It's like I think it's like $120 ViewSonic IPS, like 1080p monitor, I believe.
Which is that's the key thing to remember when we're talking about these prices is like if you can't – that's a good idea. Is if you can't afford the $800 crazy good monitor, like – you can probably afford a good IPS monitor over, like, a bigger or higher frame rate TN monitor, and you'll probably be happier with the IPS one.
Yeah, and, you know, just 2 years ago, like, 27-inch 1440p IPS monitors were a novelty, and they were really expensive. And now, kind of across the board, you can get a good one for $400. And when I paid, like, $400 for mine 2.5 years ago or something, and that was, like, a steal that I had researched really, really heavily. So the prices are coming down. These great $800 monitors hopefully will cost $600 a year from now.
Yeah. And everything's it's similar too. I feel like maybe this just always happens and I'm just noticing it right now, but like it feels like RAM is getting cheaper and SSDs are getting cheaper. Like we're hitting a period where I feel like we're hitting, like, you know, PC doesn't have generations, but, like, I feel like we're starting to hit a period where, like, the last kind of wave of new tech is starting to drop because the next wave is coming up. And so it's starting to become a pretty good time to upgrade, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, if you're a couple years behind this.
With RAM, like, DDR2 and 3 were stupid cheap for a long time. And then there was some, like, disasters in the plants where the stuff was produced, and so that drove prices way up for a couple years, and then finally DDR3 kind of beginning of this year got down to being cheaper than it was like in 2012 or so, and now DDR4 came out a year ago and was super expensive, and now it's not as cheap as DDR3, but it's getting there pretty fast.
So. It's a good time to be a PC gamer.
Yeah, it always is.
Aww. Well, speaking of PC gamers, that brings us to our Twitch chat Q&A portion of the show. If you are watching live at twitch.tv/PCGamer, hello, and please put your questions into the Twitch chat, and we'll try to grab them. If you are a subscriber, we will definitely grab your questions. If you're listening at home on the podcast after the fact, I'm sorry, but we are not mind readers, we are not psychic, and we cannot answer your questions. But you can always come and watch the show live Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific time right here on twitch.tv/PCGamer. And we will hopefully answer your questions then. So if you have any questions, let us know. First one from It's a Big Giant. Do you guys have any information regarding No Man's Sky? I think that the information we have is what you have.
It is a video game. It exists.
Yeah,
it's out coming sometime to personal computers.
It's getting away with all of the things it's promising, while like Star Citizen is getting yelled at for them, and Elite Dangerous is getting called other names.
Well, they also didn't do a Kickstarter for No Man's Sky and take $87 million as of today, or what? I don't know what Star Citizen's up to.
One of the things we can also talk about while more questions come in is Dragon's Dogma. I know this is probably going to come
up. Hell yeah.
Are you excited for Dragon's Dogma? So explain what it is, because I barely have heard about it.
I haven't played Dragon's Dogma. It's an action RPG made by Capcom that came out maybe 2011, 2012, something like that. It came out a bit after Dark Souls, so maybe it's actually It's 2012 sounds about right. I'm probably off a little bit. But it was an action RPG, fantasy, dark fantasy world, definitely inspired some by Dark Souls. But I know quite a few people who are also Dark Souls fans who love the combat in Dragon's Dogma. It's definitely a bit faster paced, and it has more of a class system, so you can kind of customize your character with some abilities and like change classes and move some abilities in between them. So that's like that's more of a kind of a system than Dark Souls has. Like Dark Souls classes aren't really that significant beyond like what magic abilities you can use. People just really, really dug the combat. I think it had some pretty interesting AI like partner system with characters that would like follow you, you know, you'd have follow you around. And I think the combat was the enemies were really cool because there'd be like these big beasts that you'd have to, you know, jump on top of them and stab the shit out of them and stuff. So yeah, people have been wanting it on PC for years, and it's one of those just, oh, surprise, it's coming out in 4 months.
Yeah, it's out of nowhere. So, although,
did
so,
you ever play it?
No, I remember being fascinated by it, though, because I never quite understood what it was. But now I will finally know.
And there's also Dragon's Dogma Online, which is, what? I don't know if it's really an MMO or some kind of multiplayer action game type thing, but that exists, and I think it's only in, maybe only in Japan or only in Asia. So maybe they'll translate that as well if the game is a success.
So going off of this, Seb Brewer asks, given that older console exclusives are starting to crop up more and more on PC, what older console games would you like
Vanquish.
To see? Vanquished.
Jesus, yeah. Quick. Oh, God, I don't know.
I'd be down to see any of the Metal Gears that haven't come to PC yet.
Yeah, it's long overdue.
Just because Metal Gear Solid 5 is getting me in the mood to try those.
I think that's going to happen. I think they're going to look at how well
I hope so.
That game... I'm guessing Metal Gear is selling extremely well on PC.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then I think they'll just look at their HD collection over here and look at the PC over here and go, all right, we can spend an extra $100,000 developing this and it'll sell a million copies.
Obvious nomination that inexplicably isn't on PC is Red Dead Redemption. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
Red Dead Redemption.
That is...
I need to play that again.
That's so obvious.
Yeah.
Maybe it's happening.
Ooh. Hopefully.
I don't know if it is. But it seems like they put GTA 4 out on PC years and years ago. That engine works on the PC.
Yeah. You'd imagine it would be simple enough to do.
We know they take their...
Although nothing's simple.
We know they take their sweet-ass time porting games, right? I mean, it took GTA 5, what, 18 months? Something like that to come to PC?
Yeah.
Granted, that was for the like the HD console, you know, re-release or whatever. But Red Dead Redemption sold ridiculously well on consoles. It feels like an inevitability for that to come to PC eventually. I hope it does.
I'm just going to foolishly and naively, or... Not naive, but completely understanding that this will never happen, anything from Nintendo.
You want Splatoon on PC?
I want Splatoon on PC. I want Splatoon with mouse and keyboard
controls.
I'm with
you there, Charles.
I would love Mario Maker on PC. Although, to be fair, the Wii U gamepad is a pretty great interface for that.
That's true.
We got a couple questions about, like Lord Amused asks, should I be worried about Windows 10 spying on me? And also just in general... Are Windows 10 gathering information? Like, is that something you should be worried about as a user of Windows 10? Like a generic, like, middle-of-the-road user?
So if you're not running an evil empire from your copy of Windows 10 and have many, many tax things to hide from whatever government of whatever country you live in, if you're not that person, you're probably okay.
I imagine supervillains run Linux.
Yeah,
probably.
That sounds right, yeah. Yeah, Black Hat, Linux distro.
But the simple answer is that, and then also you can turn off a lot of the things that are more questionable about the privacy.
So the stuff that's really shitty is things like ad profiles where they'll share, you know, some information about you. It's not like where you live and what color your eyes are and like who you're married to. It's more just shopping habits and things that produce this, you know, personality that companies want to sell to, right? They'll sell information about that, or they'll share it or whatever. They collect it from you. And they'll collect some stuff about, like, the way you type so that you can make Cortana you know, smarter and like some there's some weird stuff in there. You can turn that stuff off. It's pretty easy. There are many articles online showing you how to do it. We included one with like a little utility that's up on the site that just makes it easy to just like checkbox everything and just unclick it. It's crappy that that stuff is enabled by default. Beyond that, you know, some people have kind of dug into the way the OS works and written, you know, even if you disable all the privacy stuff, Windows doesn't stop talking to Microsoft. And that is true. This OS does send bits of data to Microsoft servers and communicate with it. And a lot of people, maybe not a lot of people, some people are upset by that. And I get it. Like, it would be preferable to be able to completely lock yourself away if you wished and have no connection to the outside world, which I guess you can still do if you pull the plug, the Ethernet plug out of your PC. But I think the reality of the way the OS communicates with Microsoft is just the reality of applications in 2015 and how many services are based on cloud storage and, you know, connecting back to stuff. And it's, you know, no, Microsoft is not like hoarding data about everything you do to blackmail you in the future. If you turn off those privacy settings, I really don't think you need to worry about the fact that it sends a few bytes of data to back to Microsoft servers every once in a while. But if you're already super pissed and paranoid about that, you're probably the type of person who just doesn't want them to do anything whatsoever without your permission. And in that case, yeah, there's nothing you can do about it. Install Linux. that's your solution.
And to round out the show, your pal Rob asks, for each of us, what game are you most looking forward to and why? Because we had a lot of big releases come out recently, and, you know, I'll start. Honestly, I think one of the games, I'm really excited for XCOM and stuff like that, but I think the game I'm most excited for right now is actually The Witness. I've wanted that game to come out for like a year and a half. It's a first-person puzzle game by the maker of Braid. And you're kind of wandering around on this island and solving puzzles, and it just looks really, really pretty and really, really cool. And I really want that game to come out, but they're not giving it a release date. They're just making it good. Damn them. I want to play it now.
John Blow will take all the time he wants.
Yeah. What about you, James?
There's probably a lot, but right now I can't stop thinking about Dropsy, which is I can't stop thinking about it.
The creepy clown game.
Well, okay, and I need to clear the air around it. I feel like Dropsy is a point and click hug venture.
Oh my god!
I think that's actually the words they use. But you play as admittedly a creepy looking clown, and the trailer kind of sells off like a psychedelic vibe. But I have preview in my hands, and I've been dinking around with it, and it's much more of an honest, like, sweet adventure than it is like a thing of your nightmares. So and it's also a lot of fun, so I think I'll be reviewing that pretty soon, but it comes out officially like in 2 or 3 days, something like that. Should be like 10-15 bucks. You guys should all play it.
Cool. It's Dropsy,
point click hug venture.
Cool. What about you, Wes?
TM. I feel like there's a lot of stuff I'm forgetting that's going to be coming out towards the end of the year.
There always will be. Yeah.
But, man, Hyper Light Drifter.
Mm.
And actually, I don't know that it's coming out this year. It might be, they might have pushed it to next year.
It is. It's early 2016
okay.
now.
Okay.
I can't remember if the question was stuff coming out this year specifically that we're looking forward
Just
to.
Just whatever you're looking
but
forward to.
Yeah. I mean, the aesthetic of that game is so confident. Mm-hmm. And just so stylish, and that seems to also carry over to the combat. Like, the combat looks really cool. Like, it's really snappy and like abrupt and pretty violent, but also just like colorful, and it looks like a simple kind of a game, you know, harkening back to like A Link to the Past or something, or an mm-hmm. action game of that era, but with much more complex combat,
right.
you know, grafted on top of it. So I'm really excited about that game. I think I feel like everybody thought it was going to be something special from the moment they saw it, and I still feel that way.
So yeah.
I'm with you.
Well, cool. Thank you very much, everybody, for watching or listening, what have you. We will be back next Tuesday 1 p.m. Pacific time right here at twitch.tv/PCGamer or whenever you listen to it on iTunes or our website, PCGamer.com. My name has been Tom Marks, here with James Davenport and Wes Fenlon. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.